Olivier briefly described the genesis of this series. It sort of started with an invitation to do a brief talk on Helen Prentice called a year and a half ago. And so I looked at that as the first of the series, so this is the fifth. And I have to say that it's been exhausting getting through this, and it's been enlightening for me because I've tended not to look back at a lot of these things because we're still in active mode, so to speak. But it's been an illuminating and an interesting process. And so I want to thank Olivier for suggesting it and making these arrangements, and for all of you for coming, because you always need an audience to talk about projects like this. This talk is called Unfinished Business, and I know that many people are vaguely aware that somehow with a cast of characters in North Adams, we've been working on a preposterous concept that seems a little bit foolish on the face of it. However, I think this is the first opportunity that I've ever had to publicly talk about it. We tended to be reticent in the press. I think we've done something like 2 press announcements in 2 years, both around events. One when Frank Gehry came to North Adams to explore doing one of the projects, and one when we hired Skanska and Joel Pringle as the project manager and the construction manager. But the spaces in between have not been filled with information. But I think that with this presentation today, with this talk, that situation is going to change. We're going to go into a more public mode because now I think for the first time we can see where the project is going. So there's like the other talks, there are threads here that I will pick up and try to explore for a while and then switch to another one and eventually tie them all together because the themes are hard to keep track of. First of all, the unfinished business part. I think that that has to go back to the time that I was at Williams. Olivier very generously half a decade off my tenure here. I actually started teaching in 1972 continued actually in the art department through 1990, so I taught here for 18 years. I'm an accidental museum director, which was the topic of my very first talk here about Helen Frankenthaler, and somehow stumbled into becoming director of the Williams College Museum of Art. At the time, its project was expanding. That led to Mass MoCA in 1985, and this topic of unfinished business addresses the fact that for the phenomenal success that Mass MoCA has had and the impressive growth of its physical space and of course the improvements here at Clark, Mass MoCA has not had the economic impact that we rather optimistically projected in the feasibility study of 1988-1989. And part of the reason was that, as I talked this through with Joe Thompson, that many people who come to the Clark and come to Mass MoCA go to one institution or the other. I mean, it's not that I studied this, I don't have it verified, but I remember my conversation with Joe on his fairly recent, he told me there was only a 15% overlap between the audiences of Clark and the audiences of Mass MoCA. So these are completely distinct and different audiences. But what it does mean is that together they're drawing about 500,000 visitors a year. But as the directors know, and see the current and former director of the Clark in the front row, most of the people who come to the Clark do so as part of a day trip. They spend their time at the museum, they may do some shopping at the store and have lunch, but they don't stay overnight. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing. There haven't, until recently, been a lot of hotels where people could stay, and it also is an indicator of the fact that most of the people are taking this, so one day or less than one day. experience. Joe pointed out that the difference in economic impact between an overnight and a day trip is a factor of 8. Because if you, same visits, you come and stay overnight, you stay at a hotel, you usually get lunch and dinner, you're probably inclined to do some shopping. It's a completely different experience from an economic standpoint. So the unfinished business here is how do you get more people to come? Now, everybody might not want more people to come, but if you could design, hypothetically, another institution that subscribe to the aspiration of being world class, but in a completely different direction, so it complemented what is existing at Park and existing at MassMoca, and it had the capacity to draw a far larger audience, let's say an audience 3 times the size. What that does to everything is transformative. It's transformative to the economy, it's transformative to the local institutions. So anyway, that was the kind of discussions that I started to get involved with 3 or 4 years ago. And this talk is to first to show you, I'm going to start with what we're doing right now with the status of the project. Then I'm going to go back to talk a bit about the origins and how it happened. Because it's complex and it's serendipitous. It's accidental in some ways. Things just fall into place. We drew on many of the things that I've talked about in these first 4 talks that brought me up to this point. What I did at the Guggenheim, the kinds of experiences and activities I've had in various parts of the world. So, this is the story of the Extreme Model Railroad and Contemporary Architecture Museum and the North Adams Cultural Development Master Plan, which is an integral part of it. The Extreme Model Railroad Contemporary Architecture Museum is the principal component, it's the lead component, I think there's no doubt about that, of a 9-part public-private partnership initiative to make North Adams, Massachusetts the #1 cultural and recreational destination in the country. That's #1. That's not second or third, but this, we've set out as an objective to try to make this the most visited place from a cultural perspective. Let's, discounting the major cities where there are complex reasons for being there, but as cultural tourist destinations and cultural recreational destinations, our objective is to make this region, Northwestern Massachusetts, the #1. And we do this in part because of the assets that are in place. And this goes right back to the beginning of, actually, the Williams College Museum of Art and Clark, MassMoca, when you looked at the astonishing resources that were already here, the Clark, MassMoca, the college, MCLA and North Adams, and by leveraging these assets that are already in place, creating an unexpected, creative, historically acute, aesthetically sophisticated museological experience, principally by deploying cutting-edge technologies that are still in the process of emerging. The cultural master plan concept actually surfaced for the first time in August of 1915 when I went in front of the airport commission at a public meeting with Mayor Altenbright to prepare the ground for leasing 5 acres at the North Adams Airport, but I wanted to build a private museum there. And to contextualize it, we developed this map. I called it the Massachusetts Cultural Corridor. That seemed to catch on. I think it was something that there was an article on the 6 months later when we did a press conference in the New York Times where the Massachusetts Cultural Corridor was still in use. So part of this is based on leveraging the assets that are already in place, including the recreational assets. And the mission of the MRCA is to create a unique, sophisticated, world-class, history-based, and content-driven museum theme park experience that appeals to all ages, from 4 to 104. In 2017, we commissioned Steve Shepherd at Williams College Museum of Art to build an economic impact report, and his preliminary conclusions were that EMRCA could attract between 500 and 750,000 visitors per year. It would create 2,000 permanent jobs, 670 construction jobs, and generate almost $200 million a year in increased economic activity. In addition, part of the general objectives are to transform the local economy and improve public health, and to promote a sense of community and individual well-being by helping to alleviate the diseases of despair. That's where diseases of despair, kind of correcting the title. I got that from Greg Elrod, who's the chief of medicine at Berkshire Health Systems, and a model train guy. I'm not a model train guy. Greg knew much more about this stuff than I did. But he talked about the fact that the kind of economic development that EMRCA represented was, in terms of public health, was dollar for dollar better than pure research in the field of medicine. So in other words, if public health is the objective, general public health is the objective, the best way to do that is to improve the economy. I found that rather astonishing. Also, EMRCA, for those of you who are potential investors, I have many investors here already, but our aim is unabashedly, this is a for-profit enterprise, to produce a 25% return on investment for the investors. Going back to Gray for a minute, I remember when he first engaged me, he came with all these numbers and statistics to prove his points, and I won't go into that, but that became part of, we folded that into the mission statement of what we want to do with the MRCA, and by expansion to the rest of North Adams. So let me take you through it step by step. This is a photograph, obviously, of downtown North Adams. Massmoke is just off the bottom right, this image. You can't see it. And you can see that the dominant feature of downtown, besides Main Street, is parking lot. That used to be part of downtown North Adams. That was demolished in the 1960s when the opportunity for urban renewal money came up, but then no urban renewal followed. And it's been kind of an iffy proposition since then. So that is North Adams now. This is our proposal for North Adams. I'm going to take you through this piece by piece. What we're proposing is 9 separate projects or institutions. The key piece, the linchpin, highlighted in yellow, is the Stream Model Railroad Contemporary Architecture Museum. This is the latest design for the EMRCA. You see it in the yellow circle here. It's a fairly sleek 800-foot long building, 145 feet wide at its widest point, and it's about 55 feet high. The building in context looks a little bit like this. You might say it's a high-speed railroad train. That's project number one. Project number two is Heritage Park. And Heritage Park is where we started all of this. And Heritage Park became part of the first option that we bought on 16 acres to develop the train project. And so our project for Heritage Park now includes 2 features. The Mount Greylock Craft Distillery. Our plan is to make 405,000 bottles of vodka, rum, gin, and bourbon on the logic that if people are going to spend 3.5 hours at EMRCA, they're going to be drunk. So it's really important to that. We commissioned a master plan with state money that was done by Richard Gluckman in New York City. And you can see that the big yellow building that you might recognize as part of Heritage Park the plan is to have it become a distillery. The third project, also in Heritage Park, is the Massachusetts Museum of Time. You can see it highlighted in yellow here. That's the gray building, which is now called Building four. As it turned out, a friend of mine, actually used to be Bob Rauschenberg's business manager, has one of the best collections in America of industrial clocks of the 18th and 19th century. What these industrial clocks look like is this. John Saft is interested in creating a museum, and it turns out that I didn't know anything about this. So this is an example of that serendipity. Industrial clocks as an industry boomed in the 18th and 19th century mainly to standardize the railroad industry, because there was a train from Adams to North Adams, and in the beginning there was only one track. You had to have absolutely accurate timekeeping. And so the standardization and commodification of time globally became a major industry in the 18th and 19th centuries. And these clocks are amazing. It's all, of course, pre-digital, but these things, and Don has 96 of these. Some of them are queen size. And they all operate. He's restored them all meticulously. So project number three at Massanutten or at Heritage Park would be the Massachusetts Museum of Time. Fourth project is a luxury hotel on Main Street. The architect would be Jean Nouvel. This is a conception of the hotel, and I'll talk more about the hotel. I'll come back to that in a few minutes. The fifth project is what I call the Global Contemporary Museum. That's the project that we originally wanted to put at the airport. And you can see that this would occupy a larger portion of the shopping or the parking lot that currently has several businesses on it and the movie theater. This is what the three buildings could look like. The inside, they would be large open spaces. There, the collections that would be shown there would be from private collectors and basically a private collection park fund. And they would complement what's at Massanutten and certainly not compete with what's at Massanutten. And probably be more in the painting rather than installations of other things. The sixth project is the theater, the Lowe's Theater on Main Street. The idea here is that this could become a Frank Gehry Theater. And I discovered Frank likes it, Becky wants to do this. I also had a chance encounter with Karen Hopkins at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and she told me about the San Francisco Symphony that had converted a rehearsal space that nobody liked, that had been an old warehouse space next to the symphony, into a performance venue by using technology with microphones and projection. In other words, low capital cost. This is not a theater like this one. It's probably a theater with actually seats in it that could be used for a variety of purposes, but it can develop, it can deliver impeccable acoustics and impeccable sound because of technology. We're thinking of a parking garage, also on American Union Drive, which I think is the eighth or the ninth project. I've lost track here. This is an early design of the parking garage, and the prototype of the parking garage is one that was built in Miami, Florida at 111 Lincoln by Herzog and DeMoron, that also doubles as a special event space. So during the summers, there could be concerts at the beginning of the roof, and during the day, it could be a parking garage. So if you look at these things now all together, there are at least at this point four world-class architects and two Pritzker Prize winners who are involved in the planning of this. Frank wants to do the theater, not the EMRCA Museum, Jean Nouvel, the hotel, the Juppé, an architect based in Beijing, and Richard Gluckman, the global contemporary. So that's basically the master plan. The prequel to all of this, and there's an incredible backstory on almost all parts of this, which is hard to kind of like frame into a coherent narrative. But of course, for me, it starts at the museum, the Williams College Museum of Art. That building famous American architect named Thomas Taft. It cost $5 million and he did the first college library. Oh, 5,000, I'm sorry. I just get used to adding those three zeros. It cost $5,000. Well, eventually it became the college museum when they built in 1924. But I happened to be on the scene in 1980-81 when the college already hired Charles Moore to design an addition. And that addition opened in two tranches in 1983 and 1985. And among the things that we did, besides expanding the space of the college museum, we commissioned work by artists. And I don't remember, I don't think this was the first Solid Wood. But anyway, Solid Wood was one of the first artists that we had invited to come to the college museum and create a special work. And it's not uninteresting that perhaps one of the linchpins of Massmoca now is that amazing 105 work installation in building 7 of Solid Wood. So by this time, 1987, I was somewhat known as a museum maker, I guess. This was related mostly to the college museum, the things we were doing with the college museum. I somehow slipped in while I kept my job at Williams, a two-year MBA program at Yale, which I thought was language training. I mean, it would be easier for me to do a business degree than an art history degree. And I thought it would also increase my capacity to communicate with both the forces in the public and private sector that one needs to mobilize projects at this scale. My epiphany came, I was at the college museum, my epiphany came on November 5th, 1985, at about 9:15 p.m. on the Autobahn between Frankfurt and Cologne. As I was driving from the Cologne Art Fair, where I had just seen this amazing installation of a German painter called Marcus Lupertz, these huge paintings in an abandoned factory building. And I'm driving up the Ruhr Valley, or down the Ruhr Valley, to back to the airport in Frankfurt, and I see all these factories, and I think, wow, you've got all these factories in North Adams. And they're not being used. And it wasn't about the space. One of the things I learned at the college museum was that with all the expansion that we were doing, with the $25 million that we were spending on it, we were only having, at the end of the day, 17,000 square feet of exhibition space. You know, Massmoca, the Sprague factory by itself was over 1 million square feet. So we started to present the argument. And this was one of the very first, you can see this is dated 1987, basically said, why do Massmoca? Well, because the Clark is here, the Regional Conservation Laboratory is here, the Getty Artistry Program is here at the time, the college was here, the Williams College Museum of Art, and Massmoca would be a perfect thing to add to. Of course, none of this would have been possible without Joe Thompson and Michael Govan, who as it happened, they were both students of mine, but who both came to work for me after they graduated at the College Museum, and both were there and were part of the creative force that established Massmoca in 1986 and 1987. Of course, Governor Dukakis played a major role, and a number of people from Europe.